Mini episode 342 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 342. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. Coming at you today, we have a great basketball discussion with one of our favorite people to talk hoops with. He is the managing editor of that NBALotteryPick.com, as well as being a longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, so one of our own, a cast member of the program, my good friend joining us from the left coast, Ben Chu. Ben, good to have you on today, my friend, to talk a little Eastern Conference hoops with you. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Rick. You know, it's a beautiful Sunday out here on the west side, so I don't think there's anything better that we could be talking about at this period of time.
Absolutely not. We're going to be breaking up our NBA discussion into two parts today. We're talking Eastern Conference, what we thought heading into the season, what the first 10 days or so of the season have taught us since then, if it's budgeted us one way or another. I guess I just have to start with the assumption that I had and that I think everybody had coming into the season here about tanking for 2014 and what we were going to be seeing, and franchises that ostensibly look to be laying it out that way to get ready for next year and the bumper crop of at least no less than three franchise players coming into this draft, maybe more than that. And yet, when you look at the standings today, you've got Philadelphia and Boston as playoff teams. It's ridiculously early to say that, but still, they would be making the playoffs. And you look at the Sixers that are in particularly strong position as we speak right now at 4-3. So what's going on? Did we just underrate what was available on these teams, particularly Philadelphia with Michael Carter-Williams coming in? He was a guy who just barely was a draft lottery pick last year. So what's the story here? Did we underrate these teams? Is this a little bit too early to say that they're going to exceed expectations? What do you think?
At this time, Rick, I think it's a little early to really try and figure out how these teams are going to shake out. We're less than, you know, 2 weeks in the NBA regular season. And at this point, I would say, though, teams like Philadelphia and teams like Boston, they have the chance to make the playoffs, because if we look at the Eastern Conference from top to bottom, there's only a real four or five teams guaranteed a playoff spot. And it feels like, in my personal opinion, that we tend to undervalue younger teams because we don't know how the experience factor is going to play in. And will guys like Michael Carter-Williams and Kelly Olynyk be able to step up for their teams in these situations? But just going very quickly back to Philadelphia, I personally feel that the way that team is being built, at least what Philadelphia GM Sam Hinkie is looking at his current roster, they got a lot of young talent, and there are going to be periods of time where I think they're going to look fantastic, and then there are going to be times when they're going to sink below to where they probably should be, which is near, like, middle to below area of the Eastern Conference.
Ultimately, with the 76ers, I don't think they would have been that big of a shock to anybody had we known Michael Carter-Williams was going to come out of the gate like this. That would have been an awful lot for anybody to guess, though. And had we known that Evan Turner was going to continue progressing the way that he has he definitively turned the corner? Is this a guy who, for a long time, people were labeling as a bust, seemed to be getting to be kind of more of a serviceable player in the last year or so? Has this guy legitimately turned the corner to at least become a borderline franchise player?
Overall, I don't think he, in response to that question, I don't think Evan Turner is a franchise player. But he is one of those few players in the NBA that has the range and the ability to create his own shot. And that's very tough, especially in this current landscape of the NBA right now. I don't think he's a franchise player. I think he's a very good player that could definitely be a piece to be used upon with a bunch of better teams in either the West or the Eastern Conference. But I don't really buy into that, well, Evan Turner is suddenly a franchise player because of the way he's been playing recently. And also in regards to him coming into the league, there was those 2 years he had to deal with Doug Collins, and it has been noted that Doug Collins isn't exactly the greatest molder of young talent during his time as an NBA head coach. So at this point, I would think that he, most likely, unless, you know, the 76ers have a super deep playoff run, I think Turner's going to be jettisoned along with some of these other middle round pieces, like guys like Thaddeus Young. And you could even make an argument for a case like Spencer Hawes, who is currently nearing the end of his contract.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, when you think about how they're going to fit into the medium term and beyond with the 76ers, yeah, that will be something to keep an eye on as far as how those contracts play out. Before we delve in specifically to any of the big dogs in the Eastern Conference, just to stay on the notion of the young teams for another second here, when you look at Philadelphia doing what they've done thus far, Boston, Charlotte, surprisingly, about a 500 team at the moment, looking like a playoff team if the season were to end today, which, again, it's ridiculously early. But do you get the sense early on that this is going to be a year, because of some of these young teams that have come together early on, where we may see a little bit more parity in the Eastern Conference? Or, again, is it too early to say, and do you get the sense that you may have some teams like the Brooklyns of the world asserting themselves when they get a chance to come together later on?
I think in a way that you can make an argument for both. I think in a way you can talk parity because the Eastern Conference at its current look, and you can even make the comparison to the West, that there are the top-heavy teams, and then there's everybody else. And then teams like the Knicks, who are getting off to a rough start, and along with Chicago as well, that you're going to have, you know, situations that there are certain teams that are going to go off the fast starts, but I think teams like Boston and Philly are going to do a little bit of regressing over the year, but that doesn't mean they can't make the playoffs, especially in the Eastern Conference, where anyone outside of the top five tier teams there are going to make it. In regards to the Charlotte situation, it's not really incredibly surprising. They do have talent on that team, but the real issue that they've had is trying to find a head coach and bring in to their system. Mike Dunlap didn't do a good job of it last year. You're going to deal with Steve Clifford, who out now has a heart ailment. So I think that's one of those teams that can be very sneaky because they have a lot of young talent, guys like Kemba Walker, Bismack Biyombo, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And, you know, a lot of people didn't like the Zeller pick, but I thought he is a very solid player that can, you know, get you low post points and then be that flex four guy that can be able to go out and hit the jump shot if need be.
Well, there's a definite need for that kind of role to be filled. And, yeah, it's a very interesting collection of young talent that's come together early on. And when you talk about young talent in the Eastern Conference, certainly my Cleveland Cavaliers have been very chaotic, kind of up and down, and kind of providing a microcosm as to what a young team can really be. On one night, they can look like world beaters, as they did against Brooklyn. On another night, they can look absolutely horrific, as they have against Milwaukee. So the Cavs are themselves kind of an encapsulation of this syndrome all by themselves. But when we're looking at the big dogs here of the conference, team that came within a whisker of making the NBA Finals last year and that came in on a short list of teams that if anybody was going to beat Miami, they were going to be one of those teams. The Indiana Pacers, as we're speaking right now, the last undefeated team in the Eastern Conference at 7-0, themselves, I've thrown the turnout before, looking like world beaters. Your thoughts on Indiana this year, without even really getting Danny Granger back into the mix yet, already Frank Vogel has brought this team together and made them apparently even stronger than they were last year.
Well, the main thing for me overall is Indiana, and we'll get to Brooklyn eventually. I think those are the only two teams that can contend with the Heat in the East currently. But the two major key moves they made in the offseason was to get C.J. Watson from Chicago. You know, they had issues at the backup point guard position. They had to deal with D.J. Augustine, who's now in Toronto. So they have a guy in Watson who can shoot, who can defend. And then one of the more underrated pickups, I thought, Luis Scola coming over from Phoenix. Indiana is such a good low post team that it gets scary, and that's essentially Miami's weakness. They have guys like Bosch who can, you know, match up with the guys – with guys in the low post, but they really don't have any, like, defensive stopper down low. And I think for Indiana to get past Miami, their bench is going to have to play a huge role in making sure that they get to the NBA Finals.
Absolutely, and they can definitely outdo the Heat with depth. There's no question when you look at that roster and what they're able to bring to bear. Miami was never really counting on being able to utilize depth either. To a certain extent, Indiana, well, to a large extent, I guess, they would be able to outmaneuver Brooklyn in the playoffs if they met up with them in terms of depth. Because, again, Brooklyn is a team built on that starting five and the experience and the skill sets that everybody brings to bear. Eroded in the case of most of the players on there to one degree or another, although Brook Lopez, clearly the one guy still working his way up. Your thoughts on a very slow start for Brooklyn thus far relative to expectations, but the potential for the team to come together as the season goes along?
I think overall with Brooklyn, it was to be expected. Whenever you have an overhaul of a roster like that, especially for the starting lineup, players are just learning how to get antiquated with each other and be able to play with one another, even though Pierce and Garnett both played with each other in Boston. But I think the slow start, it's to be expected. They're still learning everything. They have a brand-new head coach, Jason Kidd, who I like to say at this point is almost like an assistant head coach player dating back to, like, the Bill Russell days of a head coach that's already, you know, that has the experience. And I can't legitimately think at any period of time, Rick, that over the years that we've ever had a player coach come in like this. Because Kidd was playing last year with the Knicks. And at this point, it's really going to be determinant on what you think is going to happen in regards to how the Nets play with their starting lineup and how their bench is going to be able to deal with it. Because they have some great players on that bench. The real question is, will they be able to step up when need be?
Well, Kidd did just come across from the Knicks last year, and I hate to segue to them next because they don't feel deserving to me and to be in the same conversation when we're talking about some of the other legitimate big dogs in the Eastern Conference because of all of the questions that are surrounding this team, from the potential circus as the year goes along with Carmelo, the drama that he has already fueled about potentially leaving after the season, to Amari Stoudemire. You've got Charles Barkley questioning as to whether or not he will ever be even close to the same player that he ever was previously. On and on, you look down the list here, Tyson Chandler going to be out for a good period of time. What's the situation with the Knicks there? They were a team that struck me coming into the season were not nearly as good as what their reputation was among the casual basketball fans, and they've done nothing to change that opinion of mine thus far.
I mean, at this point for the Knicks, they're a very talent-laden team, but the real question is how do you deal and accentuate, make that talent better? And the real issue at this time, it's tough for me to pinpoint where the issue is because they have the talent. And if you were to look at the lineup, just eliminate the Knicks name and just look at the roster from top to bottom, they have a lot of good talent and that they should be a team that should be above 500 right now. But is either the meshing isn't there, is it Mike Woodson being the head coach? I know a lot of people are high on Mike, but I've never been. And the real question I think for the Knicks going forward is they need to bring in another option for Carmelo because Carmelo is an outstanding talent. I don't think he's the type of guy that can lead a team to an NBA championship. And for them at least, it feels that they need one more guy to come in. Because if they had that other option on offense, they would be able to be a much better team.
That's a great point about Carmelo. I've always kind of questioned that about guys who are just huge mega scorers and whether or not they themselves are going to be able to make anybody around them any better. He's a guy who from day one coming into the league was compared to LeBron James because of their draft position, and I've been warmer and colder on LeBron over the years, depending on whether or not he played for my Cleveland Cavaliers. But in a professional opinion, I've always said he does make those around him better. He has that kind of skill set. It would be very interesting, would it not, to see Carmelo on a team next year, potentially with a LeBron-type player, as might be the case, to see if he can utilize the skill set of somebody else who is able to make players around him better and thus win a title that way.
And, I mean, I completely agree with you on that aspect. And the thing, too, is the Knicks situation really dates back to the whole insanity saga and just trying to find someone that can match up with Carmelo. Because you really need a player who can complement Carmelo but also give him the opportunity to get him the ball. The problem is I feel at times the Knicks, they don't know what they really want to be. Do they want to be this, you know, fun-and-gun team that shoots a lot of threes? Do they want to be a team that plays good defense and then ekes out wins. It's a little bit of schizophrenia. You don't really know what the Knicks are trying to do. And at this point, essentially it feels like just a collection of players trying to make it work at this time. And the expectations, I think we talked about this in previous podcasts, that they were raised way past what they should have been because they had just had one of those years where they came out of the gate last season and just were absolutely running and gunning on teams. And we saw in the series with Indiana that their major weaknesses at that time were exploited. And I feel bad for Knicks fans because I don't know if this team will make the playoffs, and I don't think their lottery position is going to be good enough to get one of these top guys. So Broadway, you know, it's not looking good for them right now.
Exactly. It was a team that was put together in piecemeal fashion over the course of a couple of years, with each part seemingly being added just to generate tabloid headlines, fan interest, et cetera, as opposed to how they were going to mesh with the other players on the team. And it seems like they're paying the piper for the way that was constructed right now. The team from the second biggest metropolis in the Eastern Conference, the Chicago Bulls, expected to get a tremendous boost back with the return of former MVP Derrick Rose from his year-long sabbatical, working out the knee, getting it back into shape, as it were. Thus far, hasn't really worked out for the Bulls as expected, nor for Derrick Rose, who has seemed a little bit rustier than some have thought. So is it time to be pushing the panic button if you're in Chicago, or are you clinging to the notion of the sample size still being too small?
I don't think you need to push the panic button yet in Chicago. Like I noted before, out of the teams in the Eastern Conference, I believe five teams will be in that, you know, guaranteed playoff hunt, and I feel Chicago is still one of them. The real issue for Chicago, and it's always been, is they are so heavily reliant on Derrick Rose to be a scorer that at times that's what they've become to. They become the LeBron Cavaliers of a couple years ago, that they have one insanely talented individual athlete playing for them, but they need another option. They need another guy. I know people will make arguments that they have players like Lyle Dang and Carlos Boozer and a lot of the pieces around him, but there's no legitimate second scorer in Chicago. And at this point in the way that the NBA landscape is panning out, you really need two consistent scorers to be a very successful franchise at this point and making deep playoff runs.
Absolutely, and you need to look no further than a couple hundred miles to the east of there. Well, coming back again to my Cleveland Cavaliers, Kyrie Irving, that has been the whole thing throughout the course of his career, who's going to be the second scorer with the Cavs. And to a greater extent, that's the case with Chicago because the expectations are that much higher. We've worked around most of the other teams thought to be top contenders in the East before circling back to the three-time defending Eastern Conference champions, two-time defending NBA champions, the Miami Heat. Thoughts on how they've looked thus far this year? A 4-3 record as we are taping today. And, again, had some moments where they've been shocked by some quote-unquote lesser teams here, some of the young teams like Baltimore and Philadelphia doing them. So that's almost kind of an encapsulation of what we started off talking about in terms of the young teams and the way that they've been able to rise up. Certainly Miami's got the target on their back every night, like they're going to be the first ones to point out. But thoughts on how it's been going thus far this year? Certainly, even if LeBron James from time to time has not quite been what they had expected, Dwayne Wade has certainly come back very well and really helped bounce back the way that they were certainly hoping for. So how do you see Miami shaking out overall right now?
Right now, I mean, Rick, overall, it feels to me that Miami is right now, and what was noted by Michael Carter-Williams when he was playing against LeBron, it feels like they're coasting. It feels like, you know, they're going for the three-peat. At this point, you're just trying to make sure you stay healthy, you get into the playoffs, you get a decent seed, and you just turn it on in playoff time. It feels like a team trying the three-peat right now. And will they be able to do it? I'm going to, if you had to tell me today, like if you wanted me to place money on it, I would give them pretty solid 60-40 odds to win the NBA title at this point. But it's really going to come down to, will LeBron James have a LeBron James-type performance over the last two championship runs they've had, or will he have a Dallas performance where he will disappear at periods of time? But I can understand, and this was also noted by Steve Kerr, that when you're trying to three-peat, you will be complacent during the regular season. It's bound to happen. You play a long-ish schedule of 82 games, and then you have to get to the playoffs. You're nearly playing an extra at least 14 to 17 games, and it does take its toll. And the real question is, in regards to Miami, for me at least, is will their bench step up? They got guys like Michael Beasley, Roger Mason Jr. You have Greg Oden there as well. So if their bench can step up and be a factor, it shouldn't be too difficult for them to be the first team to three-peat since the 2000 Lakers.
When you talk about the bench, and that has really been one of the big keys to them winning the championship the last 2 years, because, again, everybody knows what the big three is going to do. You've already got them accounted for, but you cannot have CBA-level performances from the other guys in the rotation. You're not going to win the title if that's the case. You mentioned Michael Beasley, a completely unsustainable stat, yet one that's very fascinating to me. Right now, tiny sample size, but still, 4 points scored for every 3 minutes on the court. So in looking at that, obviously that's not going to be sustained. You never have a positive ratio over the course of a season. But is he one of the very big keys to this team to be able to come in and provide bench scoring as he's done thus far, and really bunch scoring as well? He's put up his shots and made his points in a hurry.
Honestly, Rick, I don't think he's the big key, but if he plays his role to what he's doing right now, he'll be a huge important part because, as you can understand, Miami is a veteran-laden team. And you need a little bit of youth. You need a little bit of guys who are willing to bang and get baskets. And Beasley's one of those inside-outside guys that can pretty much do it all, especially when it was coming out of Kansas State. But I think, honestly, the season is going to come down to three guys. It's going to be LeBron James, Ray Allen, and Shane Battier. That's going to be – those are the three big key portions of the guys that Miami will have to have big performances in the playoffs.
Well, LeBron certainly has to hope that his back gets a little bit better than it is right now, and it probably will. Very interesting when you single out those three guys. Do I take that to mean you are assuming at this point that Dwayne Wade is going to be able to hold up thus far as he has, that he's already answered any of the questions in your mind that we were all wondering about coming into the season?
I think at this point Wade is off to a fantastic start. I don't think he's going to keep this pace right now. But if he even puts in a 70 to 80% effort like this in the playoffs, they should be fine. And I like to tell people in regards to Wade and Bosch, most of the time you know what you're going to get with those guys. Last year, I know Wade was a little shaky in the playoffs going into the finals, but I think he took some time off. He relaxed, you know. It feels to me that the three key guys that I singled out need to amp up their game or step up their game, because Battier will help take guys like Paul George and all the premier shooting guard small forward combos in the Eastern Conference that Miami will have to match up against eventually. And guys, specifically in regards to Ray Allen, if Ray Allen can put in 8 to 11 points every game off the bench, that's usually the margin that Miami needs to win games. So if he can continue his pace, and it seems like he'll be, you know, doing this maybe another 10, 15 years from now if, you know, applied science happens quicker. But it just seems to me that Miami is the favorite in the East. But there are, you know, last year we only thought Indiana would make it. Now you have Brooklyn. You could make an argument that if Chicago ramps up, they can beat the Heat as well. But at this point, it's Miami's to lose. And the only thing that Miami will lose if they don't win the NBA Finals or go on to the Finals is just complacency. That's going to be their thing. You can't be complacent. And we as humans, we're complacent. So it's going to be tough for them to gear up for this 82-game regular season. But if they just get a good seeding, they should be okay. And then hopefully they can have either Brooklyn face Indiana, knock one of those teams out, and they should have an easy cruise to the NBA Finals from there.
Exactly. And there are those of us who do happen to remember them counting that they were going to win more than 7 championships before they even won their first one. So, yeah, complacency in that team, well, that would not be an alien concept to be sure. We've talked about the young surprises thus far in the East, Philadelphia, Boston, Charlotte. We've talked about the teams that Joe Public expected to be a contender in the East coming into the season, Miami, Indiana, Chicago, New York, Brooklyn. Haven't really touched much on any of the other teams here on what their odds are of sneaking into a playoff spot. I've briefly referenced a few times my Cleveland Cavaliers, but I just want to see if you have any quick thoughts in your head on any of the remaining teams we haven't touched as much upon, whether it be Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto, Orlando, Detroit, Milwaukee, or Washington. Anything really noteworthy from the early part of this season or even the off season for any of those teams?
I mean, overall for me, it seems to me if you're making that group, there's about three teams in there that can possibly make a deep run if they really need to. I like Atlanta. Atlanta's going to be an interesting team. You know, you got guys like Schrader and you got guys like Al Horford. They can definitely make a run if they can get up to their potential. Washington's a very interesting team to me at this point because they got guys like Bradley Beal. You have John Wall. You know what you're going to get out of John Wall. But they made a very, very savvy move getting Marcin Gortat to play their center position and then take a little bit of pressure off in Nene. So they have the opportunity to make a deep run in the playoffs. And considering it seems so bizarre now that John Wall has not made a playoff appearance yet, but it just seems to me that they have the possibility to take the next step. The real question is Randy Whitman the real head coach for them? A lot of us on the internet have been making fun of him for his play calling down periods of time last season and this year, just unable at times to reach the team, but they have the talent, and if you have the talent, you can win. Overall, for me, though, Rick, the biggest cluster bomb right now for me is Toronto, because Toronto has the opportunity to be a 5-6 seed in the Eastern Conference, or they could blow up their team like many of the rumors have stated, that outside of big man Jonas Valanciunas, everyone is available for trade. So I don't know. It's really going to be interesting to see how the middle path of the East play out, because there are some good teams and teams that will be able to possibly cause some teams issues in the first round. So at this point, it's sort of a cluster bomb in the middle of the East, but if you look at it year by year down the line, I think the East is going to be much stronger in the West coming up.
Really? Well, that's going to be something to keep an eye on in the period of time to come. I've been looking at this, and I've been saying for some time, and this is assuming an awful lot, but assuming the general health of the team, which has not really been the case the last couple of years when you look at Anderson Barishaw, Kyrie Irving, assuming that there's significant minutes from Andrew Bynum towards the end of the year, that the Cavs could be a team not just to make the playoffs, but if they get the 5, the 6 seed, maybe even the 4, to make it to the second round of the playoffs. When we're talking about any of these young teams in here, how good do you think the odds are that one of these teams is not only going to make the playoffs? Obviously, it means avoiding Indiana or Miami in the first round. Let's stipulate that. But aside from that, I don't know that there's anybody else that you'd consider to be absolutely unbeatable if they drew the right young team. What do you think the odds are one of these young teams sneaks into round 2?
I would think it's sufficient, at least if you were to give it out of, like, you know, 100% odds, I would give at least a 65-70% chance. Because if one of these young teams could go on a run, teams like Orlando, teams like Detroit, teams like Atlanta, it just seems to me that this might be one of those years where one of these unknown middle ground teams makes a deep run into the playoffs and at least gets to the next round. But at this point, I don't really know how much of a big deal it's going to be caused, because I don't think outside of the big three of Miami, Indiana, and Brooklyn, I don't think any of these other teams in the East can beat them. So it just feels to me that it'll be a nice story. It'll be something that we can all write about and talk about, but I don't think it's going to make any true impact unless they knock out like a Miami or Indiana in the first round.
That would be very interesting if that happened this year, because you were talking about setting the table subsequently with the Eastern Conference in the years to come being better than the Western Conference. And if we started to see something like that, clearly everybody thinks we're going to get a transitional point in the NBA. Starting next offseason, you will just be just into Adam Silver's time as commissioner. You're going to have this great draft class coming in. You're going to have a great free agent class, potentially, assuming enough of these guys opt out, which I think will be the case. So it sounds like there's a lot to keep an eye on over the course of the next 12 months, Ben, because it sounds like there could be a lot of changes happening, especially in the East.
Yeah, and if we were to look from starting from 2000 onwards, we sort of knew who the power teams were going to be outside of that year that Detroit won it all. And it seems to me that if we were to look at the landscape of all the good young talent in the East, and teams like Orlando and Detroit and Milwaukee, you can even make an argument for them that they can start building. And if they get that one piece, and if, you know, hey, you don't necessarily need to get Andrew Wiggins to make a huge leap for the playoff hunt, but if one of those teams gets another really good piece, they could start challenging the top three, because we all know Brooklyn's not going to be around for long. And we don't know if, you know, LeBron decides to do what LeBron decides to do, and there's no guarantee that Indiana stays healthy over the next couple of years. So I'm excited. It's one of those few times I see that the East is going to have a lot more storylines than I think a lot of people thought going in from the offseason.
That clearly will be the case, and whoever ends up with not just Wiggins, but Parker or Smart, if any of those players end up in the East, then all of a sudden next year you are looking at instant playoff contenders and instant candidates to do very, very well. A lot of fun breaking down the East with you today, Ben. I am licking my chops, looking forward to our West discussion. Thank you so much for a great breakdown of the NBA Eastern Conference, Ben.
Oh, I appreciate it, Rick. You know the number, so you can always find me.
Wonderful. We're going to break down the West very, very shortly. I want to thank all of you for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 342.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.